Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wrestling with Statistics, where we take a unique approach looking at the world of professional wrestling through the lens of stats, analytics, and everything in between. I am your host, Ryan Knightsey, and with me, as always, is the man of ProWrestlingMusings.com, Craig Leisk himself. Craig, how are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Some, you know, quarantine up and downs this week, but that's to be expected. I'm quite excited to be sitting down to do this now, though.
Yeah. Quarantine is not the most fun, but what is fun is stats, numbers, and
the funnest.
And AEW wrestling. that's how you do a transition. I don't know. Yeah. How are you doing? How's quarantine treating you, Craig?
Yeah. It's odd, isn't it? Kind of trying to just find stuff that works for you, stuff to do. Trying not to get too bogged down with things. I don't know, I find that I'm like really unreasonable at least once during the week and just get like irrationally angry about something that is just, you know, not really bothering you at all.
I get that. Yeah, I had a, so in my free time, when I'm not watching wrestling or doing whatever the heck I'm doing, I like to go rock climbing.
Oh really? Wow.
Yeah, I have to get a little bit of fitness in my body. Mm-hmm. But I like to go rock climbing, and obviously with everything closing, you know, going rock climbing in a gym is not feasible and also not probably going to happen in a very long time. I mean, you can open normal gyms and wipe down the equipment, but wiping down, you know, holds and whatnot,
a whole wall,
it's a nightmare. So that's not going to happen anytime soon. But I remember a couple of days ago, I was just so upset all day, and I was just thinking to myself, I just want to go rock climbing. This is all I want to do right now. And it was just like, put a little mark on my day where I was just like, I gotta do something about this. And then
it's hard.
It's rough. It's hard. And you know, it's weird that this is what life is. But you know, it's one of those things where we just got to get used to it, which sucks that I have to say that.
But, I don't really know where it's going either. Like, I don't see the end of this. I think it's going to happen again, quite frankly, which nobody wants to hear. But I think it is.
I like to hear it because I like to be at the very least realistic and safe. So it's like the safe, realistic approach is be like, just understand that like the fall, winter might not be fun again.
You know what I mean?
It's just let's just prepare our minds and bodies for the reality that can exist. And that's the approach I'm getting to it. But
that's the thing that people are having the most trouble with. Like it's your neck of the world that can't get to grips with that.
What do you mean? We're going to bowling alleys again, dude. What are you talking about? I'm hitting strikes and turkeys all over the place.
I found this really good article this week, and it was like from the New Yorker, which is American. Interestingly, Americans don't seem to have read it. That sounds a bit. I don't mean to generalize like that. I'm being overdramatic, but it was like a comparison of all the different countries, like curves. And, you know, you could see a lot of the curves of countries that were opening back up, you know, South Korea, Denmark, Australia, New Zealand, you know, these curves that looked like a, you know, a curve, an incline and a decline. And then in amongst all the countries that were starting to open up was America, who have, you know, this massive incline and an ever so slight decline that is quite wobbly and, opening back up. But anyway.
The United States are known for prematurely getting to a conclusion. Just sort of like, oh, it's starting to go down. Let's get out of here. Let's go.
All good.
it is what it is, I guess. I'm the one that has to live here. But on the bright side, we're going to bowling alleys again. We're going to gyms again, where we're getting our pump on. That's one of my funniest bits about Georgia opening up with, they're like, oh, bowling alleys can open up again. I'm just like, you know for a fact that the governor of Georgia just likes to bowl. He just likes to bowl. That's all it is. He's just like, I missed bowling. Like, if I was the governor of Georgia, I would be like, hey, guess what? Rock climbing gyms can open. And then I would go to a rock climbing gym finally. But, like, that's all it is.
Jeff Bezos recommissioning programs just because he likes them.
If you have the power, then why not just do it? Or in Jeff Bezos' world, if you have trillions of dollars, just do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, a little out of the quarantine world, but I like the update. I like hearing the update about how you're doing, Craig. I know it's not fun. I know you're a teacher, yes. Craig. So is the school year almost over for you, or you still have a couple more weeks left?
So I think there's about 6 or 7 weeks left. It's the end of June that we would finish. It's just very weird. Like, you spend a whole year with this bunch of kids and you're doing a lot of work and getting quite, you know, it's quite a, it's a job that kind of takes a lot of you. And then for it to just be kind of cut short and you're sending emails and getting pictures of work, it's kind of lacking closure. It's very, very odd.
And there's also like a level of, to a certain extent, you're building camaraderie with your students over the course of a year. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't really see students' faces anymore. I just see their homework in pictures.
Yeah. And you just kind of want to know that, like, I mean, it's a bit of a parental relationship in a way. Like, you're not their parents, but it's a duty of care in a way. There's that respect to it too. It's just like something's being cut off before you expected, which is kind of, I don't know, it's just kind of disquieting. I don't know, can't find the right word, but yeah, it just doesn't feel kind of right. My guess is that by, you know, the middle of August, school will be back in this country in some way, shape, or form. It might not be like full classrooms, but I think it'll go back to normal. Reduced classes or something. Like, I can't. Yeah, I don't know. I hadn't really considered that option.
Yeah, reduced classes could work, I guess.
It must be odd from your end where you're trying to, you know, in your kind of line of acting work, you can't really do that unless Georgia are throwing loads of actors into small rooms together.
The film world doesn't work in any capacity. I mean, the film world has sadly been, it's, the film world is one of the, I would argue, one of the safe conscious jobs. It's not like the safest job, but it definitely understands what it means to be safe on the position. However, it's not the it's never been like the cleanest job. You do have, what, you know, maybe 100 plus people confined to like a small sort of area. So it's not going to happen unless you're shooting like really, really small commercials, or you're doing like, I don't know, like a documentary following one person or whatever, you know what I mean? And you have a small crew of like 5 people. There's ways to get around it.
That's not the norm, though.
It's not the norm. The job I worked on before quarantine went down was the Titan Games, which Titan Games debuts this I think May 25th. So check it out. Titan Games with Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Oh really?
Yeah, saw him in person. A whole nother story. Oh. That's a game show. You can't do that in any capacity with a quarantine in effect. And
right.
And sadly, going back to rock climbing gyms, the things that I do in my life are things that are probably the last thing that are going to come back. Rock climbing gyms, film, just, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, because you can't do it with... You can strip down a lot of people, but then it's the work is going to... The shoot is going to pass by way longer. Or not pass by, but take way longer.
I suppose if this was to like stretch out and be a reoccurring thing, like it might like adjust and you might get a lot of, I don't know, a particular kind of film for a while.
Yeah, I could see very small commercial shoots.
Okay.
Potentially being made. But at the same time, I could also see the argument of like, if I was a producer or someone, you know, mm-hmm. some studio, or if I was Papa John's, let's say, not the Papa himself. Let's say I'm Shaq, who is a minority owner of Papa John chains in Georgia. If I was Shaq and I was like, you know, we can shoot a commercial, or the safer option is to make some sort of animated commercial.
Sure, sure.
I would shoot the moral option would probably be to mm-hmm. make a animated commercial. That does mean that now there are people in the film world that are still waiting out on jobs, and it's tough. It's a tough world that we live in. And same thing. I mean, yeah. Conversely, you know, where you live can probably get their stuff together by the time fall and winter rolls around. Like we sort of talked about, I don't know about America getting their stuff together too quickly. I don't see movies or TV shows being made, live action at least, being made for a while.
Yeah.
Unless
this sort of makes sense, much to the difficulty for everybody that depends on that.
Yeah, and it's a conversation that's currently happening in Hollywood, and that is, you know, how can we do it? What can we put in effect? I've seen pitches of like, let's house the entire crew in a hotel and test them, and then sort of, you know, quarantine them, make sure they're all safe, and test them, see if they are negative or whatever, and then have them work, and then they come back to the hotel, and so they're just sort of quarantining themselves between work and the hotel for the duration of the period. The problem mm-hmm. being, there's several...
It's like a social bubble, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. There's several problems there, obviously, like, you know, you're still going to be clean on set, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's the potential where, like, you have to order food and there's going to be outside
like
people coming in.
One slip up kind of bursts it.
We're not even talking about the fact that tests could be false positives or false negatives. Yeah. There's a whole thing. And it just unravels into, like, who knows?
Which is why I find it frustrating when you see people online being like, can't believe all these... AEW detractors are giving them a hard time for still running. They've tested this, and they've done this, they've done this, and it's like, yeah, but are you so sure? Like, it's not like if you get this wrong, somebody slips and hurts their knee. It's like if you get this wrong, somebody with such and such a health condition could die. It's not like people are kind of, I don't know, people seem to be struggling with the reality of it.
At the very least, you know, whether testing be faulty, which testing be faulty is the name of my next rap album, but whether the testing is faulty or not, at least AEW is testing, you know, whereas other companies are not, or reportedly mm-hmm. have not been testing. Yeah. It is a step into the right direction in a way. It's, you know, it's making an effort into being safe for your employees and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, other companies may have a magical spray that will kill the virus.
a sword.
Yeah, just kill the virus in an hour. I don't know why that product isn't being mass sold everywhere. or
I
what?
Think it's just Bleach. I think they were referring to Bleach.
I wouldn't be surprised if Triple H is just describing Bleach. Oh my gosh. But yeah, but besides all that, AEW at the very least is still putting on shows, you know, to still put on entertainment for their contracted networks and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we're also prepping for a pay-per-view around the corner. Of course, we're talking about Double or Nothing. Obviously, AEW has chosen the double when it comes to this pay-per-view and not necessarily the nothing part.
I don't get that reference.
I'm just sort of making a joke about why they're still putting on the pay-per-view.
Sorry, that was really rude.
No, you're fine. I'm just going to slide jokes in here. I'm just going to keep sliding them. We have a Double or Nothing pay-per-view coming up, of course. We currently, at the time of this recording, have 8 matches announced. You know, presumably with another Wednesday in between this recording and the pay-per-view, maybe something more pops up, who knows? But we'll find out when that all gets revealed down the line. Instead, you know, we got a little bit of preview. I want to talk about that little table of contents that we talked about last week, to sort of go over the show order for you folks at home. Of course, we're going to start looking at one of the select matches from AEW Dynamite past week, which was Brody Lee versus Christopher Daniels, that main event segment. Then we got another scatterplot for you. Last week, we sort of talked about, you know, we looked at strikes per hour versus win-loss record last week, and it came back slightly negative correlation. So we were wondering if strike downs would be any different. So we have sort of another graph that looks at that. With a lot of interesting factors, new developments as we started recording this, new developments that is actually quite interesting. And then, of course, we're going to go and go match by match at the time of this recording through AEW Double or Nothing before the show starts. Let's get to it, I guess, Craig, and let's look over at Brody Lee versus Christopher Daniels. Of course, that was the main event last Dynamite, where Brody Lee was able to pick up another victory on his train of victories over none other than SCU's Christopher Daniels. What about this match really striked out? All these jokes were just flying through.
That was all right. That was good.
It's passable. what kind of strikes to you during this match?
So this was, as you said, the main event. The kind of the only real match that was kind of worth going into proper detail on. Mm-hmm. I suppose there was the other tag team, the Best Friends, and Jurassic Park, but that was kind of, there was a lot of kind of shenanigans and goings on at the end of, towards the end of that. This was interesting. It was kind of undefeated Brody Lee going to take on the main detractor of even him, his existence at one point, Christopher Daniels, who was very involved with the Dark Order kind of in 2019, early 2020. A lot of people even at one stage thought that it was maybe a bit of a ruse and his fallen angel persona would come out and he would in some way perhaps even be the exalted one. So there was all that kind of backstory to this. In terms of the statistical story of this, it was really interesting. In so much that before this match, Brody Lee came in with an 85% average offense rate in his match. And, you know, there's the obvious caveat of perhaps who was he wrestling against, but, you know, nonetheless. In this match, he got 48% of the offense. So very different to what he was used to. Christopher Daniels coming out with most of the offense, if you want to paint it black and white like that. But the offense between the two men was very, very different. Brody Lee was being presented here as more of an unbeatable monster, like perhaps a little bit more like the likes of Lance Archer, in so much that the babyface going up against him couldn't take him down. And we saw this in the fact that Brody Lee didn't drop to the mat, not even once, for a strike move, a strike down, like we've been talking about. Christopher Daniels with 0% strike down rate.
Wow.
Yeah. But other things, Christopher Daniels was going for a lot of dives, 5 dives from him to 1 from Brody Lee, interestingly enough. His was a kind of a springboard senton type move over the rope. A third of Brody Lee's strikes were strike downs, so being set up as a heavy hitter, able to knock down opponents. He was being very intimidating in this match and was kind of staring down the referee, had his hands on the referee at one stage, kind of perhaps playing into his megalomaniac character. But it was the, I felt the big thing that they built Brody Lee into this match was the kickouts. So there was early on in the match, there was a kickout before one, a kickout at zero after three dives from Christopher Daniels, suicide dive, moonsault springboard type thing, and a springboard elephant, that might have worked. Springboard elbow drop and didn't even get a one count. And then later on, there was a chair shot from Daniels during the kind of Dark Order run-in. He hit Lee with a chair behind the ref's back, put in submission, and then hit the Angel's wings, only got a one count. And then later on, there, he eventually got a two count by hitting the best moonsault ever. So it was this essentially was a match of making Brody Lee look unconquerable.
Yeah. Yeah, Christopher Daniels definitely got like a little bit more offense in this match than Brody Lee, but ultimately you're looking at everything, it's like, no, he, Brody Lee himself is still a monster. You know, he is still where the quality of wrestler before Brody Lee would just utterly destroy them. Now Brody Lee is, he is still, I mean, it, maybe not destroying, but at the very least, what's the word I'm trying to say? Overpowering? Nah, he's kicking out at one. He's, you know, he's doing all these things where he's you, whatever you do, I'm back up. You know, I'm not.
Daniels kind of had to get the offense here so that we could see that Brody Lee
is
resilient,
is unstoppable to a certain extent.
Yeah, yeah. It was some of the kind of similar Lance Archer booking here, but perhaps even dialed up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. One thing that just sort of struck out to me that I kind of liked a lot was that the match length here was 9 minutes and 35 seconds, which before this match, Brody Lee's total match time in AEW was 9 minutes and 28 seconds. So that is a 7-second difference. I just saw that and I was like, oh, that's a fun little stat.
Which is what they, like, they've made Brody Lee look like really strong here, and it really helps for going into the pay-per-view match. Mm-hmm. But like, Christopher Daniels wasn't buried, you know, he's an older guy. Is he 47 or something? He's quite old.
He's up there. He's definitely up there.
Yeah, in terms of like wrestler kind of age ranges. And you know, there's still something to get out of this guy, but not if you just flatten him all the time. And they haven't done that here.
Christopher Daniels is 50 years old.
Is he? Oh, wow. Jeez.
Yeah, that is. He can still go for 50. That's awesome.
This is a good match as well.
This is a real, real good match for a 50-year-old. This was the match that was sort of building up the proposed Exalted One versus the actual Exalted One. And yeah, you're right. You had to give Daniels more match offense to show the unstoppableness of the Exalted One Brody Lee, which greatly plays into, you know, our conversation that's definitely going to be happening about the main event, presumably, of Moxley versus Brody Lee, about how it appears that, you know, Moxley is someone that is very resilient, but can he overcome someone that is, I would argue, at this point, the epitome of unstoppable. In Brody Lee. I mean, there. I don't know. Looking at all these numbers and everything, I was like, a third of his strikes are strike downs. You know, Daniels gets a little bit more reversals, but ultimately still pills out, you know, still doesn't win. A chair shot to the back only gets one shot, one count.
Didn't get one count.
Oh, didn't even get anything.
It's that thing where he covers him and it's an immediate kind of recoil. Type kick out.
Oh my god! I don't know what John Moxley is going to have to do, but we'll get that conversation, I guess, later down the line. Yeah, very good match. I really liked this. I enjoyed this match. It wasn't a great match, but it was definitely a good match to watch, especially with the story background of it all. And yeah, good on Christopher Daniels. 50 years old. I cannot believe he's actually 50 years old. Yeah. That's insane. Okay, well then let's get into the next conversation, which is we have another scatter plot here. Sort of what I said talked about earlier was that last week we looked at strikes per hour versus win-loss record, because we've been sort of looking at unveiling the average offense, match offense per, versus win-loss record, and we saw that there's this positive thing that the more offense you give, the more likely you win. And so we looked at strikes, and it came at back as a sort of negative correlation that we're like, okay, maybe strikes don't play a necessary idea, but maybe an actual strike down where you hit the opponent so hard that they fall, maybe that is more positive. And, we got the graph right on the screen as you can see it on our video version, if you are seeing it on the video version. Craig, walk us through this thing. What are we looking at?
Yeah, just on that in the video version. So we're talking about statistics here, and usually we try to say them out loud to put them in your head. I'm a visual person. I always, if I can see it, it kind of means more to me. So if you are, I don't know, if you're like walking whilst listening to this or whatever, if you do go to the website, progressandmusings.com website, the latest AEW League standings, what did I call it? AEW Wrestling League Report Post Dynamite. Match stats and league standings, and everything that we're talking about is there, so you can just see it, get it up on your phone or whatever. That's certainly what I would do. In terms of what it looks like, so well, there's one thing that jumps straight out, and that is the guy that always jumps straight out of any crowd, and that man's name is Lance Archer. Lance Archer has a strike down rate per hour of wrestling of 62 strike downs. So if he was to wrestle for an hour, on average, based on what he's done so far, he'd get 62 strike downs, which is over one strike down a minute. That's crazy. So he's way out front. Jimmy Havoc is number two, 30 strike down per hour, and he's been in a lot of squash matches. So that's kind of really highlighting the bulldozing, clobbering Hulk type figure of Lance Archer.
And again, to bring the weight of what we're saying, we're not saying just strikes. We're talking about over a strike down a minute over the course of an hour. Basically, he'll punch you and you fall almost every minute, I should say, in an hour.
Yeah, and it's fun to say those stats, but you do have to do the boring logical thing that gives you credibility and point out that Archer hasn't had five matches against the best of the best. It's not been Omega, Pac, then Cody, then whomever. He's been in a few easier matches. But I don't know. That's selling them short a bit, I suppose. There's been Dustin Rhodes and Colt Cabana amongst all of those. So they're around the middle of the pack, I suppose you could say, as AEW wrestlers go.
Yeah, the only I guess quote unquote, well, I'm not gonna say jobber. The only, because this person, as I think, exceeded jobber limitations. The only person
really high though, if you're Lance Archer.
Fair. The only person that Lance Archer has faced in AEW Dynamite that has not been a contracted talent, and that was Alan Angels.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Who Alan Angels, as we all know, eventually faced Kenny Omega and then Rey Fenix.
He's the man that took down Kenny Omega, though.
Yes, correct.
Destroyed Kenny's career.
Yeah, you're right. He kicked out at one, just like Brody Lee. Lance Archer, the quality of, looking back, it's actually the quality of his opponents are actually not,
as I was saying, that it's not being Brody Lee type stuff. He's faced some decent guys.
Yeah, Dustin Rhodes, Colt Cabana. Dustin Rhodes is a 22 minute match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, what else about this graph?
The headline is that it's a positive correlation, meaning that having a lot of strike downs does lead you more likely to win the match, which wouldn't be a surprise for me. I mean, strike downs, that's everything from the fifth punch in a sequence that eventually, you know, drops into the mat, or things like super kicks, clotheslines. I've been counting a spear as a strike down. I know in the old SmackDown versus Raw games, that would be, you would hit a spear using the grapple button, but I also felt it was more of a strike than a grapple. You're hitting them with your shoulder, essentially. It's not really particularly drawn out. So yeah, it's those big. Yeah.
I would not describe a spear, just the object of a spear, as like a thing that will catch someone. It's a thing that you're throwing at someone that's going to hit them.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Strike downs. It's a positive correlation. So it trends quite highly towards winning matches. That does come a lot from Lance Archer having such strong numbers alongside his wins. Jimmy Havoc, he's got a +2 win-loss record, kind of pulling it along there. And then Jake Hager, Kenny Omega, Colt Cabana, and Sammy Guevara are other guys that are kind of above average with strike downs. Below average with strike downs, Cody Rhodes, Jon Moxley, interestingly. Mm-hmm. Especially as they are the two guys with the best win-loss records.
Yeah, interesting enough that they're so high on win-loss records, and yet they're like not that great in terms of strike downs. They're sort of, you know, middle of the pack, maybe up there with, you know, strike downs in terms of like Jericho, you know, Christopher Daniels, Orange Cassidy,
the
strike down king. There's that little cluster in the back that I just want to highlight as well. Again, if you're looking at the graph, there's a little cluster right in the back of MJF, Spears, and Darby Allin.
Yeah, MJF and Spears in particular are not proficient strike down guys, but and Darby Allin just ahead of them, but are doing well in the rankings. So, you know, it's showing that there's no like recipe to winning a wrestling match. It's complex, and they're not booking it in a way that if wrestler A does X and Y, they will win. If wrestler B does Z, they will lose. It's, you know, it's more of a tapestry than a mathematical equation.
But compared, based on what we've seen in the past 3 weeks, compared to a strike down will, you know, take, looking in, I guess, in the kayfabe of it all, a strike down on your opponent will more likely lead to a victory than just a bunch of strikes to an opponent.
Yeah. I mean, what we could say from what we've seen over the last 2 weeks is that guys that are using a lot of strikes but aren't using them, that aren't focused and using them to take their guy down, are probably cutting legs out from underneath themselves. Whereas guys who are intending to hit heavy and put their opponents down to the ground, you know, that is a far superior strategy.
Yeah, this graph is very interesting. And then you sort of have a second graph here that I just want to highlight again, that you just added in the women's division, which we sort of get to a little bit, but you added a little bit of the women's division into this graph that I just want to highlight a little bit.
Yeah, so I kind of did that for data, to add more data in to see, you know, it's still early days of this, and perhaps in 6 months' time, we'll find out that strike downs aren't actually a big deal at all. The reason that I've always used the male singles division for this is because certainly in 2020, with all of the things going on, this has been the division that has been most used by AEW. There are only actually 6 female wrestlers that have wrestled for more than 20 minutes this year. But when you add them in, the first thing that you say is the women are using strike downs more than the men. That's more of a feature of their matches. But also that flattens the correlation slightly. Mm-hmm. And then if you isolate those 6 women and put them into a separate graph, it's quite a negative correlation between strike downs and winning the match. But then, I mean, the obvious thing to point out there is there's only 6 of them, which is not a particularly good data set. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something when it comes to the women's division to be looking at when further in the year, as the year comes, turns around a little bit. And obviously they've had a situation where a lot of their women's division, you know, Joshi related or from England or whatever, can't be used. So it's like they're using less people. But so far what we're seeing, that, and it's not just a negative correlation,
it's the biggest correlation we've seen.
It is incredibly negative. It is insane to look at. And I'm interested to see, I guess, how, you know, looking back on this maybe like 2 months from now, to see where we have. Because, yeah, like you said, a lot of this stuff is you're looking at least 20 minutes of ring time. You know, a lot of people were still even though we're in May, not everyone's getting a lot of TV time, and especially when those Atlanta tapings take out a lot of talent and obviously quarantine and whatnot. So I'm interested to see what this looks like as the year moves further along.
It's early days, but it's interesting to start looking at it now. And I think there's enough data there to be, you know, these, you know, there's loads of data there for the male singles division, and you know, seeing how it progresses over the course of the year is interesting in itself.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, speaking of matches, I never transitioned set up. But speaking of looking at and looking forward to something coming up, what we want to look at here is AEW Double or Nothing. Like we talked about, that's the pay per view happening this Saturday. This Saturday, May 23rd. So get your pay-per-view buys ready, folks. We wanted a little preview, match-by-match preview of everything that's happening leading up and giving some sort of stat breakdown, a little bit of stat breakdown for the matches that we can do it for, of everything that's happening. So you ready to do this, Craig? Ready to go through these 8 matches?
No, not really. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I'll just go do it by myself. You can take.
Sorry, I'm one of those people that like just likes to be really irritating. Here, everybody loves it. And yes, absolutely. I'm very excited about AEW Double or Nothing. Not as much as I usually would be for an AEW pay per view. I think it's just because of the quarantine and the weird situation. But I'm sure I'll enjoy it when it comes around.
I actually agree. I do agree with that. Like, sort of talking about Double or Nothing itself,
seem like it's 8 days away.
Yeah, there has been this like fervor of energy.
Eight days away. That's how long away it is.
Yeah, obviously the match was scheduled. The pay per view was scheduled to take place at the MGM Grand Arena in Las Vegas. But a lot of stuff has changed in the world to no longer allow that. Now it's just presumably happening at Daly's place in Jacksonville. I can't imagine how it can't be. I'm very intrigued about what's going to happen at Double or Nothing. It's going to be very weird to watch. But of course, we've had WrestleManias at the Performance Center, so who knows? But yeah, I'm interested to see, like you said, I'm not the most excited currently, and let's see, I guess, what this upcoming Dynamite has to say for itself.
I also don't think they have built it as they would have done otherwise. Like, I don't think we'd be going into it with, I don't know if it will be the main event or if it'll be like the Stadium Stampede thing, but like, I don't think the world title match would have been involving Brody Lee.
I would agree with that. I would 100% agree with that.
You know, I think they're maybe saving things.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They're hoping that, what would the next pay-per-view after this be? Double or Nothing, 3 months from now, June, July, August. So that was what? All Out, I believe?
Yeah.
I'm imagining they're hoping that All Out can really be that pay-per-view sort of thing. That sort of idea where we have fans in attendance and everything. Sense. Okay, well then let's start looking at Double or Nothing. I have a list of matches here right in front of me that I sort of want to go through each individual match. First off, in the buy-in, we have Private Party ranked according to, of course, the rankings of Pro Wrestling Musings, which you can always find at ProWrestlingMusings.com, or in the AEW Wrestling League report, which is linked in the description of this episode. There is Private Party ranked number 8. Versus Best Friends, ranked number 3. Of course, there is the stipulation in this match that the winner of this match will become the official number one contender for the AEW World Tag Team Championship, which is interesting seeing at those rankings. Craig, what's your first take looking at this sort of buy-in match?
So it makes, Best Friends versus Private Party.
Correct.
Yes, sorry, my brain is on go slow mode this morning. Best Friends deserve it. Best Friends should be in that match. That makes sense. Statistically, based on, you know, Dark Order, Orange Round, Stu Grayson and Uno, Evil Uno. See, this is the issue with the way the AEW book things. I expect Private Party will win a match on Dark, and that will make this look more reasonable. But for me, that's the wrong way around. Obviously, they're trying to get pay-per-view buys, but they book things too quickly. Like this doesn't need to. This isn't going to get you pay-per-view buys. So have Private Party win on Dark, then have Private Party wrestle against. I don't know, who could they wrestle against? Lucha Brothers or even, I don't know, anyone, TH2 or whatever on Dynamite, for the right to face Best Friends in the number one contenders match, and then there you go, it makes sense.
Yeah, there is this idea that if you just, looking at it right now, Private Party are 3-2, if they had a match on Dark that they win against whoever, and then a match, let's say, on Dynamite against Jurassic Express, then they become 5-2, which then means that they are 6 in the ranking. And it's like a little bit closer. Maybe just have Best Friends lose a match so they drop a little bit. I don't know.
Based on what you were describing, they'd be just fine Best Friends.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you can, based on the bookings that they've been doing, where it's like the Dark matches matter really a lot more, I guess, is what what they're presenting it as. It really just can really, it feels like it inflates it, but I guess really what they're presenting is that the Dark matches really matter, even though they're just against, you know, Ryan Rembrandt and Mike Reed or whatever.
They've done this all the time. Like, they did this really badly with the women's division for a while. And it just bugs me. You can see the inner workings too much, and it feels more like WWE than it does like a sport when they're doing things like that.
Speaking of sports, I looked a little closely into some of the specific stats. You know, of course, we started talking about how match offense, strike downs, or, you know, could be things that lead to victories. So I sort of pulled those numbers for these tag teams here. Looking at strike downs and versus to versus mode, Private Party, you know, beats Best Friends by having 4 more strike downs per hour than Best Friends. Average match offense, Private Party is 59% versus Best Friend 48. I also looked at their tags and double teams. This is sort of like the first tag team match that we've had, that we're looking at, that we're previewing or whatever. So I wanted to look at, you know, I was wondering if tagging a lot in a match, you know, keep staying fresh, that idea of coming in, staying fresh, in a way, sort of tagging a lot would mean that you have more control of the match in a way, potentially. But then there's also control of the match versus in double team maneuvers. I wonder if those things can lead to victories. Looking at that, tag teams, or looking at Private Party when it comes to tags, they have 28 per hour versus Best Friends 21. In double teams, Private Party has 29 per hour versus 15 at the Best Friends. So basically, Private Party's ahead in all 4 of those demos that I looked at, you know, despite being ranked way lower. So I'm sort of like wondering, why is that? Maybe there's this experience edge with Best Friends, or endurance, defense, potentially. You know, looking at their total offensive take-in, Best Friends has 218 per hour versus Private Party's 169 per hour. So Best Friends take a lot more offense, and they still win. Private Party has a 35% reversal rate versus Best Friends 27%. So a lot of numbers there that I just threw at you. But based on all those things, based on all those ideas, who do you think can potentially win this match?
I would suggest that it would be the best friends and private party are very unpredictable, very inconsistent, I think is the word that would come to mind in terms of them. They're very exciting double team moves and dives. They do loads and loads of diving maneuvers. And that was very apparent in their match on Dark this week. But yeah, I don't know. Best friends are on a roll. They're sharp. They've been wrestling loads. And they're in huge amount of form. Both men have just become 7 for 7 in 2020. These two were way down at the bottom of the overall standings for quite some time. Both of them have had a poor time of it in singles matches, and they have suffered a couple of losses, at least one certainly in trios matches. So yeah, they're in form, they're on the rise, confidence must be high. And yeah, I think they're going to be rewarded, quite frankly, for helping hold things together during the Georgia gym shows and the recent kind of AEW Dynamites and Darks from Jacksonville.
Yeah, there's this thing about like looking at the numbers versus, booking ideas about like it totally makes sense. It's a, I agree that it is this is sort of potentially a reward to the best friends for helping out. I hope that doesn't like slightly give this idea of like to other tag teams where it's like, well, if we showed up, maybe we could have had a title shot. That I hope that doesn't insinuate that idea.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. But it's hard. It would be hard to use that as a reason to not push the best friends.
Unless they lose this match.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless they lose this match, and then it's like, well, they didn't get the title shot. They showed up, but they didn't get the title shot. Which is interesting. I think numbers wise, yeah, I think the Private Party has really good numbers that they put on the board, but they lose a lot. So it's like, well, then they're not, something's not happening. Something's not clicking with them. I remember for a long time, I was like looking specifically at which one? I believe it was that Shooting Star Press. That I believe Mark Quinn does.
That's right.
I don't quite remember which one's which.
Mark Quinn, it's an amazing Shooting Star Press.
Amazing Shooting Star Press.
It's like Will Ospreay type athleticism.
Yeah, you'd be surprised though how many times he immediately goes for that pin. You'd be surprised of how many times he doesn't win the match with that Shooting Star Press. When I was looking at it last year, it was like incredibly low. It was like they never won a match with it. I was like, wow, they keep doing it, hoping it's like it was like Sami Zayn's Blue Thunderbomb, where it's like you keep doing it looks beautiful, but they're never winning with it.
Yeah, I suppose that's an issue with the way that wrestling's booked in general, in that like that doesn't that that's how it works. You can tell like New Japan in the G1 last year kept noticing like Naito started to hit a like a running Destino, and it would never pin someone, but if you did like the standing Destino, then it always would. And the same became true with Jon Moxley when he did like the snap Death Rider, he'd never win. But when he did the full kind of elevated Death Rider, he would always win. And I think AEW have been trying to subvert that. They've, Kenny Omega won a match with the V Trigger. Cody's been winning matches in different ways. Private Party, I do believe, sorry to bring forward such direct evidence against your point, but I do believe Private Party actually beat Lee Johnson and Moosa with that very same Shooting Star Press.
They did. They did. I'm just.
You
I.
know,
I.
it's a good example. It's a good example. It's just that happened to be on in my mind.
They did win with that match, and I remember thinking it was like, well, they finally won one.
Yes.
I would have to double back and like watch a lot of more matches from
Probably
Private Party.
you'll be 100% right. That'll have been the only time it'll have
That
won.
I can think of at the very least.
And I think the fact that there have been a lot more independent wrestlers wrestling as enhancement talent, they've kind of underlined that by having a lot of the wrestlers win with just like big power moves or secondary finishers.
In a way, it's establishing those secondary finishers. Let's move on to the next matchup here that I have lined up. It's looking at MJF versus Jungle Boy. MJF, of course, ranked number 6, who's also undefeated in 2020 so far versus Jungle Boy, who's ranked number 26. That he only has one loss. He's only had one singles match in the year so far. Yeah. But that match, that loss, I should say, did come from episode number 19 of Dynamite from Austin, Texas, where it was MJF defeating Jungle Boy in 11 minutes and 54 seconds.
Oh, really? Okay.
So that loss that Jungle Boy suffered, it's sort of like we're having Jungle Boy MJF number two here this year. So
yeah, I think it's a kind of good hand, a safe hand to kind of get MJF back into competitive singles.
Agreed. Yeah, again, looking at those numbers, strike downs, you know, 5 per hour for MJF versus Jungle Boy's 20. It should be said, all of Jungle Boy's numbers are from this one match that he had against MJF. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, that strike down number, incredibly small for MJF. But like we talked about in the last segment, strike down numbers, despite having incredibly low strike downs, MJF still wins. So even then, it's like, okay, he still wins. Average match offense, 53% for MJF versus Jungle Boy's 45. Total offense take of 128 for MJF versus Jungle Boy's 167. And Jungle Boy's reversal rate is also higher at 34% versus 27. I agree. I think it's probably an MJF win here. Mm-hmm. You know, especially looking at that high win loss record despite lower numbers. And you know, he's better than everybody. You know, and I guess now we know it.
Yeah, I would suggest MJF will win this match. I would imagine he will be challenging John Moxley at some point in the future. I also think that MJF versus Jungle Boy is going to be a big headline match at an AEW pay-per-view at some point over the next kind of 2 to 3 years. They're both outstanding. Mm-hmm. They're both very good at what they do.
Yeah, no, I'm interested to see. I would agree that MJF could probably win and go off into challenging John Moxley, I guess, in between, you know, after the casino ladder match, however that plays out.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we sort of talked about earlier where it felt like maybe MJF was being groomed to be the world title shot challenger, and maybe that's what they're hoping for when they get to All Out, it being MJF versus John Moxley.
I think it's too early for him to win. I don't think he should be winning it this year. I hope this isn't all about Cody.
No, yeah. I don't think MJF is there yet. That's the problem.
I want to see Kenny Omega take the belt and be the champion for a bit.
Yeah, I guess more of a conversation we'll have later, but we'll just have it now. Let's just have it now. Who, maybe a little playing our hand until what we think about the main event, but who do you think will take the title from John Moxley?
I think it can only be Kenny, unless they go with Paige. But I don't know. I want to see Kenny Omega as the AEW champion putting on, like, excellent world-class wrestling matches as at the top of the card.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, just looking at, unless someone turned heel, of course, only looking at heels, we're talking maybe like a Lance Archer.
Yeah.
Maybe Brody Lee again. Hager. I mean, these are all people he's already faced, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
It's hard. The other name is Pac, but he doesn't feel like they see him like that.
Yeah, Pac's not bad. Pac's not a bad mm-hmm. choice. Not at all. It's definitely someone that we don't know yet. I think it's someone that hasn't been built up yet. And I guess you could say Omega is included in that, because I would argue that Kenny Omega has sort of been on the downslope a little bit.
He's been in the background, to say the least.
No, background is the better way to say it. He's definitely been in the background for all of this stuff where it's like, okay, maybe they could heat up Kenny Omega. They can heat up a pack, but I don't think it's someone that we necessarily know yet. Can they really, really heat up an MJF to win the world title from John Moxley? Maybe. I don't know.
I think they can. I don't want them to rush with him.
Exactly.
I think it would be to the detriment of somebody like Kenny Omega.
I would agree with that. Let's look at the casino ladder match that's going to be happening. Of course, the casino ladder match, a very weird ladder match where two people will be starting off in the ring. There'll be a chip that's hanging in the sky. At any point, anyone could climb the ladder to reach the chip and grab it. Of course, that chip will give you a future AEW World Championship match. But every couple of minutes, another competitor will be added into the match until someone eventually wins it. So there's potential that someone could win this match before everyone else comes out. There's potential that everyone will come out and then someone's going to finally win it. Right now, in terms of announcements at the time of this recording, we have in this match Darby Allin, Colt Cabana, Orange Cassidy, Rey Fénix, Scorpio Sky, Kip Sabian, Frankie Kazarian, and apparently there will be two more that will be announced. So I guess we'll find that out on Wednesday. Or maybe there's surprises. I guess there's potential they could be surprises. Maybe it's Mike Tyson.
possibly.
So we'll find out, I guess, that this Saturday upcoming. But of course, we can't really talk about stats when it comes to this match. It's a gimmick match. It's also we're not pinning anybody. It's climbing a ladder. But just sort of fun looking at it, Craig, who do you think could potentially win this match to get a future AEW World Championship shot?
I'm fascinated by this match. It sounds really interesting. Ladder matches are always fun. The kind of ladder rumble match that they've Royal Ladder match that they've set up is interesting as well. The kind of chip hanging sounds a bit interesting, but anyway, I would love Rey Fénix to win this match. I would really like to see him pushed higher. He's a guy for me that could be in that main event scene, kind of top, going with the kind of top level guys. There was a match in AAA last year where Kenny Omega won the AAA championship from Rey Fénix. It was an excellent match, and it didn't look like Kenny Omega was just going to win by default. It made sense. I'd be a big fan of Rey Fénix coming out as the winner.
I could easily agree with that, especially since, you know, with the quarantine separating the death triangle, with Pentagon being stuck in Mexico, with Pac being stuck in England, and Fénix being stuck in the United States, this is the perfect opportunity to do a singles push for Rey Fénix. So why
Absolutely,
not give him
yeah.
that world title Absolutely. Shot? My pick, however, I'm just going to go outside the ball. I'm just going to say Orange Cassidy. I just think it'll be fun. There's no real reason why I'm saying Orange Cassidy other than the idea of some sort of match between him and Jon Moxley. I would have preferred if it was Orange Cassidy versus Chris Jericho.
Yeah, that would have been really interesting.
But I just like the idea of everyone, like, he's just climbing the ladder very slow. You know, Jimmy comedy spots.
Well, that's going to happen.
It's 100% going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a spot where
get like halfway there and just give up.
Or just he's climbing the ladder, and on the other side of the ladder, it's like, I don't know, Darby Allin and Rey Fénix fighting for control, yeah. And just it's a sloth that's slowly climbing this ladder. I don't know. It's one of those things where Orange Cassidy.
Thought of all the possible Orange Cassidy gags in a ladder match.
Yes, there's it's infinite. Honestly, the only reason the only reason I have for Orange Cassidy potentially winning this match is that, based on, you know, ratings and whatnot, it appears that Orange Cassidy is one of AEW's top stars when it comes to like boosting ratings. So
absolutely, yeah, and that's not surprising. I don't have any problem with Orange Cassidy being a future champion. I think it works. I think the people that think it's outside the box have a current lack of imagination or are miserable. But I
only those yeah, two I options. Could, only those two options.
I could see him as champion. Not at the moment, but yeah, give it 3 years. Why not?
Yeah. Or at the very least, maybe challenge for that TNT title.
Yeah, definitely.
But if you're saying that, like, I'm looking at the rating perspective, if you're mm-hmm. saying that you can have Orange Cassidy win this match and then prep for an Orange Cassidy world title match, those are some rating numbers right there.
That absolutely works.
If your ratings start dipping, you can be like, well, here, let's play this. I was gonna say card really chip to get this popping ratings, and I'll do it. I like Ray Phoenix. I think there's a better idea of Ray Phoenix, but Orange Cassidy, there is the selfishness of just enjoyment, but also a rating pop will always get that there.
Yeah, I can almost see Ray Phoenix. Oh, but is that limiting? I suppose it's the issue with the secondary title that a lot of people talk about. I could perhaps see Phoenix more as a TNT champion.
I would agree. I think the problem is that I don't necessarily think Phoenix... I don't think Phoenix is the person that's going to take the world title shot. Mm-hmm. You know, take the world title from Moxley. But he's a good person to do a title shot for. I think the problem is also it's like I don't know what's going to happen to the TNT title tournament. Which I actually forgot to do when I did all these previews. Now that I'm thinking about it. Let me quickly do that in the background. But let's move on to the next match as I quickly put some numbers down onto this sheet of paper. Let's talk about Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander. Britt Baker, of course, ranked number 5 versus Chris Statlander, number 9. What are you thinking so far when it comes to this match, Craig?
I would like to think that they're going to go with Britt Baker. I think she is so hot right now that it would be silly not to. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's apart from like a properly good Kenny Omega match, she's probably my absolute favorite thing in the company. I think I'd rather see what Britt Baker is going to do next than Orange Cassidy, weirdly.
How dare you? First Fabu Andre, and now this.
I'm big Orange Cassidy fan. It's just Britt Baker has been something special, and I don't think anybody would have expected that 6 months ago.
Yeah, Britt Baker is doing an amazing job as a heel in this company. She has been, you know, during those Georgia tapings, she and Sheeta have both been amazing. People in this time. I think it's also, weirdly enough, it's also similar to the Best Friends, where Britt Baker, it makes more sense for Britt Baker to win because maybe it's a little thank you, but it's also like Britt Baker has done an amazing job. Let's keep that train rolling. Conversely, does this hurt Chris Statlander? Probably.
I think Britt Baker has done more for the AEW women's division than anybody else has in the whole thing, just based on this last month.
You know, that sounds like a hot take, but when you think about it, it's like, you know, I agree. I actually agree with that. I think I agree with that sentiment.
With the title.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. Yeah, when there is the possibility, of course, of Sheeta winning, and then you have a Sheeta-Britt Baker match.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is always interesting. Looking at some of these numbers, strike downs, Chris Statlander wins 34-27. Average match offense, Britt Baker wins 67% to 53%. Total offense taken, Chris Statlander wins 157 to Britt Baker's 132. And then reversal rate, Britt Baker wins 40% to 32%. So very back and forth, it's very up in the air. Of course, like we sort of referenced earlier, whether or not the strike downs really matter when it comes to the women's division versus the men's division. Got a negative correlation, but it's also too early potentially to tell.
Yeah.
So who knows? I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Britt Baker wins here. You know, I think it makes the most sense.
Chris Statlander hasn't wrestled much recently. Britt Baker has. The only thing is, if Britt Baker, you could see the story being Britt Baker gets carried away in the way that she did this last week, and then Statlander wins.
Yes, I could see that. I could see what, and then maybe lead to some sort of DQ finish where Chris Statlander gets the victory, but Britt Baker looks more dominant in it. You know, maybe that's something.
Yeah, possibly. I suppose it also depends who wins. The title match, I don't know if they would really want to have Britt Baker versus Nyla Rose.
Yeah, two heels. This company doesn't really do heels too much in terms of against each other.
They should. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Britt Baker's my victory. My victory? My victory. in this match, you know, comparatively. And I guess it sort of plays her hand into the next match, which will be champion Nyla Rose taking on number one ranked Hikaru Shida in a no DQ, no count out AEW women's title match. Yeah, so big
stipulations are for it's odd.
Yeah, they I guess the addition of these stipulations was sort of in tying to
Kendo's
the Kendo stick of it all.
Yeah.
But we got a match here. Finally, after all these felt like months, Hikaru Shida gets a proper singles. Not even gonna say proper singles. She gets a singles match, but it is a no DQ, no countout. Would interesting enough. My WWE brain is like, oh, looks like people are gonna be involved in the match. Because I don't know. I think it's gonna be interesting. Obviously we can't really again look at sort of the numbers, the stats of it all because. It's a DQ match. You know, they all hit each other with kendo sticks and chairs. We're going to do a kendo stick hit rate or something. I don't know. It's going to be insane. But looking at this, I mean, sort of playing our hand from the Britt Baker match, I personally really like the idea of Hikaru Shida winning. I think, again, however, I always have to say the caveat. It might be this thing of a thank you, and I don't want to establish this idea that we're going to give you stuff for showing up. But Hikaru Shida has been slowly but surely, and almost in the behind the scenes of like Dark, been winning week after week after week. Now she finally gets that title shot. Can she get to pull out the victory? I like to say she will. Of course, maybe Britt Baker gets involved in the match somehow, but I also like the idea of Hikaru Shida winning, and then we do a Hikaru Shida Britt Baker match moving forward, potentially. Maybe that's the all out match. Who knows? What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, it's interesting. The stipulation seems to be throwing me. I don't know if that's a WWE thing, like, what's the way out of this? What's, you know, stipulations, etc.
Yeah.
The stipulations make me feel that Nyla Rose is going to win. If it wasn't for that, I would have been swayed more towards Shida. But I don't know if that's just my Orange Cassidy. Like, I think that Shida's fantastic. And yeah, I think she works as champion, but I also don't like Nyla Rose very much. I don't particularly think that, I suppose until recently, that she had been booked particularly well. She's been better in the last, since she won the title, but yeah, I don't know. Shida, perhaps.
Yeah, there is something about this match that I'm thinking about. It is sort of Hikaru Shida's kendo stick versus Nyla Rose tables.
Yeah.
If I had to put the money down, maybe tables is more devastating.
I think we'll see some tables.
But there's always the spot. I always, you know, I'm thinking of like the spots and whatnot. There's always a spot of setting up the table, the both battling on the apron or whatever, and then Hikaru Shida hits Nyla Rose with the, you know, Hikaru Shida can't powerbomb Nyla Rose through the table or whatever. But it wasn't until she uses the kendo stick to knock out Nyla Rose. Nyla Rose falls through the table, and then 1-2-3 pin or what? I don't know. These are just my ideas flourishing.
The other option, which I think you're alluding to, is the stipulation is the way out to put the title on Shida without making Nyla Rose look too bad. Like, look at what Shida had to do to Nyla Rose to win the match.
Mm-hmm. True. That is very true. That she has to potentially use a lot of instruments take her away, and sort of in that way defends Nyla Rose as sort of this monster. That's always a possibility. You know, straight up, we don't want to make her diminish her monsterness.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is something in saying that, hey, you know, Nyla Rose quarantined herself and Shida did it, so maybe Nyla Rose is sort of changing the titles and then going back in quarantine. You know, she's doing the job or whatever. Yeah. That's all conspiracy theory, really. But who knows? My pick's Shida. I like Shida. I think she's a great wrestler. I think she's uber babyface. She's amazingly talented. You know, have you seen these videos on Twitter? She can sing, play the piano.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
maybe she should be a heel.
Maybe she should be a heel. That's the WWE logic. It's like, oh, she's great. She's great. Maybe let's turn her heel. Okay, well, let's go into the next matchup, and that is Cody versus Lance Archer for the inaugural AEW TNT Championship. Of course, will be presented by none other than Iron Mike Tyson himself.
Left field.
Which just popped up, and I was like, whoa, okay, here we go. I'd love to see it. But yeah, Cody versus Lance Archer for the TNT Championship. Cody being ranked number 2, Lance number 3. Craig, what's your takes?
So I was having a quick look at the stats for this. Lance Archer, 5th out of 38 competitors in terms of getting offense in, 2nd out of 38 in terms of taking offense. So he's kind of, his matches seem to be, there's a lot of danger, like he's trying to hit people hard and fast. They're hitting flurries of offense on him.
Mm-hmm. But also the idea that we're playing with, that Lance Archer asks for offense often.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, he's kind of 5th out of 38 competitors in terms of like rate of how quickly he's dishing it out. But yeah, as you're saying, he kind of spends a lot of time laughing at his opponent's inability to hurt him. Cody, in comparison, 25th out of 38 competitors offense rate given, 27th out of 38 in terms of offense taken. So Lance Archer in a short amount of time has kind of proven himself able to dish it out and even more able to take it. Cody has been there a while and his matches, they are longer, so there tends to be less offense rates get watered down when matches are longer because there's more kind of selling of injuries, so things slow down towards the end. But Cody doesn't have the same kind of proven track record of the kind of speed of offense and the ability to take it like Lance Archer does.
Yes, and then there's always that, like we talked about earlier, there's always that Lance Archer strike down rate of 62 per hour, which is insane to really think
Absolutely.
About. Really get the test of time here when it comes to this match coming up. It's tough. You know, I'm looking at this match right now, and I don't see any reason why Lance Archer shouldn't win. I think Cody is a great idea. Obviously, not being able to challenge for the world championship, I think a TNT title would be great, especially there's the idea of it being Cody, TNT, there's all these aspects that I like about it. But just Lance Archer coming in and taking a title right off the bat, especially from Cody, especially the story that we've been given, I think makes sense. Lance Archer, honestly, is my pick to win. I think, you know, it would be nice for him to get the victory. Then maybe Iron Mike Tyson pulls like the you know, Stone Cold thing and punches Cody in the jaw. I don't know. Or again, but maybe he cashes in his chip from earlier in the match or earlier in the show and cashes in on the TNT title because whatever Iron Mike says is whatever Iron Mike does. And that's just one of those many jokes that I'm sliding in. Anyways, Lance Archer's my pick. Craig, what do you think?
It's hard. Like, all of the story, all of the reasoning points to Cody, all of the out of the kayfabe points to Cody. The man has 970,000 followers on Twitter. He's personable. He's the face of the company. TNT probably like him. He's got all of the kind of tools for to be the guy. And then there's the storyline with the stipulation. He can't challenge for the world title. What if he gets the TNT title? Is that good? Is that just a reminder that it's not the title that he wants? Mm-hmm. Like all of the story, all of the kind of complex story points to Cody winning. But when you boil it down to kind of old-fashioned, simplistic wrestling, capitalizing on what's there in front of you, Lance Archer's not a young guy. I think he's like 43 or something. He has come in hot. He's exciting. He's one of the best things on the show. Like, everybody loves his matches. They're so exciting. He's the best big man in the business at the moment? I can't think of somebody that I enjoy more. I really doubt there is someone, except maybe like Brock Lesnar when he's wrestling a Finn Balor, Daniel Bryan type character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know, like it's the hardest one to call for me. I think it has to be Archer, but there's so many reasons it could be Cody.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's really what it is. It's like it's down to like there's political, I don't know how to say it, political booking reasons why it should be Cody, but just the domination of Lance Archer. I really like Cody because it's like Cody is the spearhead. This is the TNT championship, the network's championship that,
I think there's a lot of
Cody's the
value
face
in
of.
undefeated Lance Archer as well.
Exactly. It's a whole thing that I don't know. This is probably, I guess the streak continues. This Cody match is probably the one I'm most interested in on this card,
Me too.
just because the potentials of it all is just there's astoundingness that is all over the place that I can't wait. Moving forward, we have the just real quickly this Stadium Stampede match. We don't really know anything about it, I guess, really, ultimately. It's going to be Inner Circle versus the Elite. It's going to be Stadium Stampede match, which I guess is just a fight around Jacksonville Jaguars Stadium, similarly to the street fight that we had earlier. Who, I guess the question that kind of is out there is who is going to be fighting on behalf of the Elite? I think Omega and Hardy is positive. The question is, are the Jacksons coming back? The Young Bucks coming back? Is Adam Page coming back? Who knows?
Think the Jacksons will be there.
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what I sort of feel as well. Can you see Adam Page coming back?
I don't know. I think that's hard.
Why
Like
do you say that?
I don't know. It would be hard for him to have stayed out for all this time for no other reason. We don't think there's any other reason than just his kind of own decision.
Yes. Yeah.
But then, is it 4v4? Is it 5 versus 5? Is it 5v4, perhaps? Does Marty Scurll get brought in for one night, Cody fight twice? I don't know.
Oh man, Cody fighting twice. I didn't even think about that idea either. Oh man. There's so many I think this is also one of those matches where it's like it's way too early to tell because we don't I guess we're gonna figure it all out on Wednesday. Because last week was taped. This week will be live.
Yeah, that's right.
Then obviously then going into the pay-per-view and presumably the week after that is taped.
Who
Who
knows?
knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? What am I, Tony Khan? Yeah, so I guess we'll officially probably find out who's the members of the Elite are this week. Adam Page and the Jacksons all make sense. Assuming it's those team, who do you think's gonna win?
I think the Inner Circle wins here. I think that the Elite will win the eventual blood and guts match whenever, if ever that happens. I think a loss here really hurts the Inner Circle, and they do seem to be starting to build them up again. So yeah, I don't think the Elite need the win. I don't think they should win. I think there's a better story if Hangman Adam Page is there, but I suppose you can keep that because people will be invested in that whenever it happens.
I sort of think obviously depending on the team, I think the Elite should win, in my opinion. I sort of see what you mean, like the Inner Circle maybe could use the win, but I also go back to the Inner Circle technically kind of won the street fight, it was just a tag match. So I was sort of thinking in the sense of like this could be that comeuppance match. Maybe this match is sort of, realistically speaking, the filler match for the blood and guts match that was supposed to happen. And that match I would have probably said Inner Circle, but now I'm sort of like after all this time, I feel like if the Inner Circle win, then I don't think the story is over, and I think we need to maybe move slightly off of it to go have the Elite win and maybe the Elite go in to face the Dark Order or something like that. Maybe Brody Lee gets the world title shot, then goes back down, and they all fight. Of course, there's no actual proper Dark Order tag team. Well,
Not currently.
I guess you could do Alex Reynolds and John Silver, but we haven't seen them either.
Yeah, I think also not around.
So who knows? I guess it really depends on who they have available to them. But yeah, I sort of feel like Elite could get the win. We establish Matt Hardy as a threat. I don't know. I'm not confident in that decision, but I sort of am leaning towards an Elite victory.
Cool. Yeah, makes sense.
Well, let's get into the final match, which is, of course, the main event. And that main event is Jon Moxley taking on number 4 ranked Brody Lee. We've sort of been alluding to this and sort of talking about this match for the past 2 weeks. You know, sort of talking about the strike downs and the match last week with Jon Moxley and Frankie Kazarian. There's a lot of stuff playing into here. Not really going into the strike downs and everything too much, but basically Brody Lee is dominant. And the story of the match is going to probably be Brody Lee being an unstoppable force, but Jon Moxley is incredibly resilient. Total offense taken 202, so he's taken a lot of punishment. Can Moxley's threshold of pain outlast Brody Lee's sheer force of nature, really? That's really the story of the match that we've been setting up here. So all of that in consideration, Craig, what are you thinking here? Who is walking away the champion?
So I've got Jon Moxley, and we spoke a little earlier about how this might be a bit of a filler, bit of a B kind of like a B show type match. I think that's probably the case. I don't see them taking the title off Moxley here. In terms of the kind of story behind it, the numbers, Jon Moxley's kind of his total offense that he's been like hit with in his AEW 2020 career is 359. He's taken it in total, so that's not like per hour or anything, that's the actual total number. And number two in AEW, somebody who has wrestled for 15 minutes longer than Jon Moxley, and Cody Rhodes has taken over 101 shots fewer than Jon Moxley. So Jon Moxley has been hit a lot, essentially.
Wow.
So yeah, the resilience thing there, percentage of matches, match offense, 45% on average for Jon Moxley. This is where it's really interesting with Jon Moxley. It's not even like he's taken a lot of offense and has shown that he's great at reversing wrestling moves. His average reversal rate is 23%. That is the 34th highest out of 38 competitors. He's way down at the bottom. He's just able to get hit, slammed, torped in submission moves a lot and come out of it on top. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be able to take everything that Brody Lee can dish out. He has a track record of this. He defeated Pac when he had one eye. He defeated Kenny Omega when Kenny Omega was throwing everything at him in that crazy unsanctioned match. And he kind of has a blueprint for this already. He defeated Jake Hager in that empty arena match a few weeks ago. And it was kind of a similar kind of idea. Jake Hager went into that 4-0. And Moxley still proved his resilience, still came out on top. So yeah, I think if somebody is being positioned as a guy to absorb and, you know, hit his one shot against Brody Lee, it is Jon Moxley.
Even adding to that story that you're talking about Jon Moxley versus Chris Jericho, which kind of the story of that match was the numbers game, right? Where it was the Inner Circle sort of being the pack of wolves that Jon Moxley has to defend himself. Looking at this match, you not only have the unstoppableness of like the Hagers storyline breeding into Brody Lee, but you also have the numbers game of the Dark Order, press 10 Vance, and potentially Alex Reynolds, John Silver, seeing if we have them, or all the other masked people that are in this promotion.
On that match that you mentioned, it's just my notebook, so it's not proper data, but Y2J, 85, sorry, Jericho, 85 offensive maneuvers to Jon Moxley, 75 in that match. So yeah, again, it's just, it's resilience, resilience, resilience.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is definitely that match where they're bringing into question is Brody Lee is incredibly powerful, but so can he put down Moxley's resilience? When does the resilience break is the question. And that's the thing is, like, you know, we going back to our just conversation of who will take the title from Jon Moxley. It really feels like it's someone that, I don't know. If Brody Lee, who is incredibly powerful, it's got to be someone that is incredibly even more powerful. I don't know. Something has to break for Jon Moxley, and hopefully it's not like an actual bone, but something has to break. And is it Brody Lee? Can it be Brody Lee?
If only there was a guy on the roster that had a finishing move that nobody had ever kicked out of.
You're talking about Orange Cassidy? Because now we're talking. Maybe it's not the most powerful person in the division. Maybe it's the most sloth-like person in the division to take down the resilient Jon Moxley. You know, maybe it's just the inverse of power is what you need.
How could you argue with such a well thought through plan?
This is the booking that needs to be done. You know, it's that is what makes the most sense to me. But yeah, I agree. I think Jon Moxley winning this match makes the most sense. Again, it's tough because it's like looking at these numbers. How can it not be Brody Lee? You know, he can probably add more numbers games into it. You know, I don't know. It's really tough. Brody Lee has been incredibly powerful, but it doesn't make any sense for him to win at this point in terms of booking.
Yeah, of course. From a non-kayfabe point of view, it seems likely that Brody Lee will lose, and this will feed into the whole persona. He'll become a bit more deranged. He'll find masked creepers to blame, and it'll just further his kind of character growth.
Mm-hmm. Plus, if we, you know, not to steal my idea from earlier, but if we have, you know, maybe Dark Order versus the Elite, then you can potentially have maybe like a Cody versus Brody Lee for the TNT Championship.
Which he could perhaps lose again, and, you know, more anger and rage thrown around it, you know.
Yeah, Brody Lee is a character that if he wins, awesome. If he loses, still works. You know,
exactly.
And then the Dark Order going after the Elite is obviously a storyline that they've teased, but hasn't quite happened yet.
So
I'm interested to see where that goes. But yeah, I mean, I'm.
That's what they were setting up for. When you look at the numbers, like Dark Order 5-0 as a tag team.
That's very true. That is very true.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. Looking at it, like Cody and Lance Archer was the match that I'm most excited for just outside of the show. But since doing this show, I've found like the more appreciation and excitement from looking at the numbers and stats and everything when it comes to this match. I probably wouldn't be like the most excited about this match, you know, Moxley versus Brody Lee, if I didn't really fully understand the idea that Brody Lee is incredibly dominant. Moxley is incredibly resilient. All the numbers really present that idea. And it's like, oh, that's the story. Now that's what I'm looking for when it comes to that match.
But do you think, what is the idea with that? Like, is it supposed to be an implicit story where, like, people just kind of, like, I don't know. For me, the story's better with the numbers when you use the numbers to illustrate it like that.
I would agree, and that's what I guess what I'm kind of trying to say is that I wasn't
raising that at you. It was more like the kind of why aren't they doing this?
Yes. I think that implicitly, I think that's what the story has been shown to us. You know, fighting an empty arena match against Hager. you know, fighting, beating Chris Jericho. I think they're, or, you know, overcoming Kenny Omega. I think they've sort of been setting up this idea implicitly that Moxley is incredibly resilient. But I agree that, like, knowing the numbers, knowing the stats behind it and everything, it's like, and knowing that that implicitly becomes explicit to a certain extent.
Sure.
By looking at the stats and analytics of it all. That it makes the match way more exciting to me. Why they're not, yeah. I don't know if they, this, it's one of those things that, you know, it's the thing that we talk about every once in a while, that if they had a show, I don't know, maybe like a show like ours, that really went into the numbers and stats of everything, then, and, you know, really into that sports stats idea more, then this is a perfect presentation for them. Like, it's basically like, I'm putting over ourselves is what I'm trying to do.
But it is what people thought that they were talking about at the beginning. Like, people say that so often when they discover, you know, some graphic that's been put together or whatever. It's, you know, I thought that JR was going to be announcing these halfway through matches.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they're not more explicitly doing it. But, you know, that's what we're here for, folks. We're here to bring those implicit ideas to light. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of Wrestling with Statistics. That's our preview of Double or Nothing. We are both, I mean, speaking for Craig, I think we're both very excited for this pay-per-view in the sense that there are some matches. We sort of talked about that it's not the most hyped thing, but there are some things in here that are exciting to look at on a finer scale. I'm interested to see how this Saturday turns out. We'll be back next week to really dive deep into the Double or Nothing matches that take place. We sort of talked about this last week after the show, Craig. Our episode probably won't come out on Monday just because of timing and everything. So look for that to drop probably sometime around like a Tuesday, maybe as late as Wednesday. Maybe check out our Twitter just to, you know, double check. We'll tweet out just to be confident. But yeah, any final things to really say, Craig? Anything to say to the folks at home before Double or Nothing?
Oh, I feel pressured to have something to say.
Really bring home the troops on this one.
No, do have a look. This is on ProWrestlingMusings.com. There's an article that's got all of the graphs in here. It's worth looking at. I look at them myself and, you know, spend some time looking at them myself, which is kind of a nice reaffirming thing for me. But yeah, you know, have a look. It's all there, and it really enhances the kind of the listening experience.
Yeah, no, definitely go check that out. There will be a description or a link in the description of this podcast episode where you can go check that out. And of course, there's always the YouTube video version of this this podcast that you can go to. Hit the Books Podcast on YouTube. There'll be a link of that in the description as well, where you can sort of go and watch a version of this podcast and get more information as you're listening to it. As you're watching it, yes, that's what I'm trying to say. follow me at Twitter at Hit the Books Pod. You can follow Craig at PW Musings. You know, if you like what you heard, leave a review. If you like what you heard, leave a review. We would greatly appreciate that. If you want to leave a review, of course, if you want to hear more of it, you can always subscribe. There's always more things on the sort of network, podcast network sort of thing that you can listen to, like Hit the Books flagship every Friday's fantasy bookend, realistic fantasy bookend, where each week it's like SmackDown versus Raw. It's kind of like GM mode SmackDown versus Raw. It's basically what we're doing. You can check out those every Friday. Like I said, PW Musings on Twitter, Pro Wrestling Musings on the internet. Go check that out. Definitely. We'll be back sometime next week. Just check out our Twitter just to double check those things. And one last thing. If you feel inclined, obviously, you know, people are going through tough times and we don't want to pressure or anything, but if you would like to potentially donate anything to the show, you can. We're housed on redcircle.com. There's a link in the bottom description of this podcast, and you can donate to sort of financially help us or anything during these troubling times. Obviously, we understand that it's weird and everything that's happening, so we're not saying It's not a necessary thing or anything. We're just sort of like, if you feel inclined in any capacity, we would obviously greatly appreciate that. But yeah, so for Craig, I have been Ryan. Thank you everybody for listening to Wrestling of Statistics. We'll see you next week. Enjoy Double or Nothing. Have a good day. Goodbye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.